Blog Talk Radio.
Music Quest Entertainment, in association with Music Quest Communications, Tribe Family Channel, and Genius is Common, presents Real School Remix Radio Show in a special edition broadcast in celebration of Black History Month from 7 to 8:30 Central Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com/gumbo for the soul. It's 90 minutes of music, interviews, and power-packed information designed with the community in mind. Tonight on Real School Remix Radio Show, we honor the memory, legacy, and genius of the legendary recording artist, Prince. Hosted by Professor Reggie Miles, Real School Remix is a Music Quest entertainment production produced by Gus Redmond and Ebony Redmond. To join the conversation, call area code 347-539-5285. This is Edutainment, brought to you by Music Quest Entertainment.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Reggie Miles, and welcome to the Real School Remix Radio Show. How you doing? Gus Redmond in Paris is on the line right now. We look forward to having a great show, a great hour and a half of power-packed information for us to share with you. Gus, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Reggie. How you doing today, sir?
Well, wonderful hanging in there. Paris, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful also. And how are you doing?
Good. Man, wonderful. It's a great day, and I'm just so happy to have this opportunity to sit down and talk and share information about the great legendary artist Prince. And really, I just don't know where I want to start. Do I want to start at the very early parts, or do we want to get to the beginning? But we're going to try to tell this whole story, well, much of what we know in its entirety. And I'm so glad that each of you gentlemen have given your time for us to share with the world about the great artist Prince. Gus, can you give us some opening remarks on this wonderful and legendary artist?
Well, I started with Prince. I was looking for Pepe to be. I'm looking for Pepe to come on with us soon, on the call. But Pepe Willie out of Minneapolis, originally from Brooklyn, New York, is the cause of putting Prince and them business together and the way they played and the way they knew how to record. And because his knowledge had came from Lil Anthony and Imperial. So that was his uncle's group. So he was the cousin to Prince's cousin. I mean, he was married to Prince's cousin. So he had the opportunity to come up. And the first song that I represented with him was through Navarra. Remember when I was working for Navarra out of Minneapolis when we had, Run DMC and Boogie Down Production, and we had New Edition. We had all them hot groups that was coming out of New York and California that was really, charting a lot of new artists. And Reggie and I had the experience to play all of these records before they got to the country. And, of course, Minneapolis would be close to what we were doing. They had a station called KMOJ that was in Minneapolis. And, of course, we had KKC, your station, Reggie, you was on. So that's how far we go back. The music from what we were doing in Chicago and the Midwest and back over to Minneapolis and always being hooked in, it was always there, So what our plans are is to talk to a lot of people, just like Paris is on the phone now. So since we got Paris on, why don't we talk to Paris about his part of, Paris. Reggie, you want to introduce Paris?
Absolutely. Mr. Paris Holley, international composer. I don't think that's big enough for you, I mean, you've really touched
that's
millions of people with your music. Millions of people you've touched with your music. And what was your relationship with the legendary artist, Prince?
Well,
tell us some of the great things that you know about him.
It started in 1994. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. I think it was a Saturday, coming into a Sunday morning. I was restringing a Les Paul guitar, and the phone rang.
Mm.
I do know that people who hung out with me at the recording studio some of the people went to Minneapolis, some of the people went to Death Row. But at that morning, I got a phone call and somebody said, hello. So I listened to the voice again. I said, who is this? This is the artist. So we started talking. So I'm still stringing the guitar. So I'm saying to myself, okay, yeah, right, okay. But then he said a couple of things that became recognizable to me from him talking on the radio with other people. So I said, okay. I said, well, how are you? So we started talking, and he heard me playing. He heard me riffing because I was tuning the guitar. And he says, can you play it again? So I said, sure. So I played a riff for him. He said, do you mind if I use that riff? And I won't play it exactly like you. I'll just change it up. I said, no problem. So as a matter of fact, I can show you a bunch of them. So we started showing each other guitar riffs. Okay. Then it got into the conversation that people that he knew, I'm not going to say they were from his camp, but people that he would invite to Paisley Park, he had guitars coming up missing, instruments missing. So he knew I was a collector because someone had told him that I collect guitars. So he gave me a little small list of the guitars that were taken from him, and I started looking. And like I said, I started playing, and he was very interested in some of the notes that I was hitting. And he said, well, how did you play this again? Anyway, he invited me to Paisley Park. I said, well, I can make one visit, and that's it, okay? So I ended up making that visit, and it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And we went into, I think it was Studio A, because he had four studios, actually, in that complex. And that was the big studio with the SSL console. So we sat down, and he felt kind of, and what is the word? Because I was much taller than him, he wasn't real comfortable. And I told him, I said, look, if you want to trade, I'll trade. You can have my height and give me yours, because I can't find clothes to wear sometimes when I go into the stores. So it broke the ice, okay? It broke the ice. And we started sitting there just riffing back and forth. He said, well, let me show you this. And next thing I know, we spent the whole night just playing. My fingers were sore. We spent the whole night just doing guitar riffs. So ever since then, we have been phone friends, a tremendous phone friends. He would call me in the wee hours of the morning, and we would talk about a lot of things I can't talk about because I promised him I wouldn't. But we talked, we covered everything, our parents, how we grew up, the whole nine yards. He said, well, you're not too far behind. I said, when you were coming out, okay, so was I. But I didn't want to be known. I wanted to stay behind. And we started talking why. So I explained to him about what the Jacksons had said to each other when I went to Lake Geneva Playboy Club Hotel. And at the hotel, Jackie said to Marlon, I think it was Marlon, Marlon, we can never do things like normal people again. We can't go out in public. We can't do, and it scared me to death. And that's something that I enjoy, is having my privacy, being able to get on my motorcycle, eat at restaurants and stuff without being bothered. I love my freedom. I never wanted to be an artist, never. But I wanted to do music. So one way to do that was to go into soundtracks. And then I think that he picked it up and he started creating soundtracks. That's something to think about. Next thing I know, Batman. And he started picking up little sayings of mine. Like I used to say, I have no horse in that race. So he turned it around and used, I have no dog in that race. So every time I would say that, I would kind of laugh. It would put a smile on my face. And I heard him say a lot of things that came from me, but I never told, never mentioned. I tried to keep his relationship a secret totally, because he did not like his business in the street at all, not even a little bit, okay? So I promised whatever we discussed, I would never discuss with anyone else. And that's how our friendship started.
Wow, Paris. So you're saying that much of the relationship that you built with this legendary great artist, it was based on the fact that you guys were both guitarists?
And we both almost had the same upbringing. It was amazing to him when we started talking about our parents, okay? He said, wow, that's hard to believe. I said, but it's true, you know? And I said, with the motorcycles, and then he saw my motorcycle, okay? And he just, wow, I want a bike like that. I said, well, you can get anything you want, Bill, you know? But then it goes into the record company, it goes into the record company, and it goes into the Purple Rain idea, and it goes into a lot of other things. But, you know, I never discussed those things because what happened was the way it happened. And he realized that I'm not a jealous person. He also realized that I could care less about money, okay? So that relationship was strong. And the day, Prince, we decided not to talk on the cell phones anymore was the day that somebody had tapped both of our phones at the same time. And I had a machine that would detect another line that would come in on my phone illegally. And at the same time, if they came in on my phone, they came in on his phone. So I told him, I said, get rid of the cell phone. I said, if you want to contact me from here on in, make it emails. Or text.
Wow, that's incredible. Let me remind everybody right now, you're listening to the Real School Remix Radio Show, and we're talking about the celebration of life. Well, we're talking about the great legendary artist Prince. We're visiting with some great people that knew him, knew of his music, and the journey that he went through as an artist. Of course, we want to thank Gumbo for the Soul, Miss Beverly. And we also want to thank Mr. Bruce George for allowing us to have this forum so we can speak on this during this Black Music Month. And it's a great thing, great way to start off this month by talking about such a great legendary artist whose birthday was last week. It was one day last week. I'm sure it was, last Wednesday?
Last Wednesday, yeah.
When his birthday. Yeah, when his birthday was, and he would have been, 57, 58 years old?
57.
Yeah. Well,
57,
Donna,
yeah. 50.
What did you say, Gus?
No, I was wondering, Don Burnside on, or is it Pepe on yet?
No, that's me, Gus.
Is that you, Donna?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that's Reggie, that's Don.
Hey, Mr. Burnside.
How you doing, sir?
How are you? Oh,
listen, I
great speaking with you.
Just been listening to you guys enjoying the show. I'm just the spook that's at the door here. I'm just enjoying the show.
Let me see. Hey, Pepe, are you on yet? Okay. Well, what we could do, we'll go ahead and go ahead with Don, because I wanted to kind of bring Pepe in if he was on. He just called me and said he was calling in. So, but Donna, we could go ahead. Reggie, you can ask Don some things. He's got some things that he did with Prince as well. And
most of my involvement with Prince was through when he initially was with the same management with Earth, Wind & Fire. Remember, Gus?
Right.
We had the same management, and so since we were all here in Chicago, involved with Earth, Wind & Fire, you know, Tom, and all of us, and then, you know, that was kind of like how we really saw Prince in a different light. Everybody else saw him as, you know, the wild star and everything like that, but we just saw him as a real reserved, you know, talented, respectful guy who just, you know, every time he would, you know, come in contact with anybody at the office, he was always very, very respectful, very, very reserved. You know, it was all about his music and all about his talent, and he was really in tune with the environment. And also, June Moon, who was a promotion guy here in Chicago, actually, he's a drummer himself, used to play with the Staple Singers and what have you, but he went on to start working in the record business as a marketing guy. And he was the first one that actually introduced me to the first Prince album, because he had the Prince album for like 3 or 4 months. And Gus, just like you was talking this morning about how people don't lay groundwork for records like they used to. I mean, they laid the groundwork for the Prince record, and I was helping him a little bit with it for a good 3 months before they even went to radio. I mean, I'm talking about every nook and cranny, club, this, college, everything you could think of. So when they finally went to major radio, it was just a, you know, smash.
Right, yeah. This is Pepe here. I just called in. I was just listening to what you were saying there, and that's absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Go ahead, Pepe, because you were real close with him. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, like, Chicago, yeah, was one of the places where I did some marketing with Owen Husney, Prince's first manager, and we drove from Minneapolis to Chicago to go into all the record stores and brought in posters and book covers for kids, you know, so they cover their books up. I hope everybody remember book covers. I don't, you know, they don't have book covers no more. But
true. They don't even. If it ain't a cell phone cover, you can forget it. Okay.
That's right. You know. Right. But yeah, so we did a lot of marketing, and it was good because the Prince had got a lot of free marketing. You know, I mean, which costs us now hundreds of thousands of dollars, even, you know, somewhere along the line. But the people here in Minneapolis, when they found out that this kid was playing all the instruments and got signed with Warner Brothers Records and from Minnesota, I mean, the media just clammed on him. So he did get a lot of free publicity, which was very good for him at that time. Yeah.
Hey, Pepe, tell the story of when it really started with you and Prince, way before that, you know, tell the story of you and Prince.
Well,
take it to
well,
the
started,
beginning.
You know, 1,000 years ago, it seems like now, but I was married to Prince's cousin, Chantel Mandeville, and I met her at the Copacabana Club in New York where my uncle was performing at with Little Anthony and the Imperials. He's one of the Imperials. And I met her there, and then to make a long story longer, we got married, you know, and she happened to be Prince's first cousin. So I met Prince when he was actually 12 years old, you know, in 1970, just when I got out of the Army. Instead of me going home, I came here to Minneapolis, and I seen Prince then. But he was just like just some kid, you know. He looked like he was 8 or 9 because he's smaller than the rest of the kids because he was so short. And so I didn't pay him any mind. But then 3 years later, when I was out in New York, he did call me and ask me about publishing in the music industry, and I told him then that I was going to come to Minneapolis, and I talked to him then because I couldn't explain it to him over the phone. And so when I did come to Minneapolis, he was around 16 years old. He was playing with his band Grand Central, and Morris's mother, LaVon Daugherty, was their manager, and I was at a ski party that my father-in-law had gave at that time. And the Prince band, Grand Central, was playing there. And they were looking for a producer, and they had heard that some producer from New York was coming, you know, to check them out. And I didn't know it was me, you know. So I thought that was very funny. So I did ask LaVon at that time that after I heard a couple of songs that they did, they were doing like Earth, Wind & Fire songs and things like that, and that I wanted to work with the band, but not noticing anybody in particular as the main person in the band. You know, it was just the band to me. And I didn't realize or recognize Prince's talents until I started working with the band closely. And I thought he was just a guitar player. And then he went to the keyboards and was showing Andre's sister what to play, and I went like, oh, okay. I started scratching my head a little bit, and I says, oh, okay. And then he got Andre's bass. He wanted to borrow that for a second because he wanted to play a part, and he wanted Andre to play it, and he starts playing bass. And I'm going like, okay, wait a minute. This guy plays, wait a minute. He plays guitar, he plays keyboard, and he plays bass. And I'm not just saying just messing with it. I mean, he played it. He was playing, you know. So, you know, I had asked him then. I worked with the band for about 4 or 5 months or maybe a little longer. And then I invited Prince to play with my band, 94 East, for his first professional recordings in the studio. He had never been in the studio before. And then we went in 1975 and kicked out 5 songs, and now they're known as the Cookhouse Five. But that was the first time that he was in the studio with us, and we did like 9 other songs after that, even wrote one together, Just Another Sucker, you know. But, you know, he was very, very talented at a very young age, and he did, and that's all he did. He never, you know, like, worked in a grocery store helping people with packages or packing bags, and, you know, he didn't have none of those jobs. His whole thing was total, total music all the way.
Wow. Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah.
I'm going to see, I'm going to, go ahead, I'm going to look at, what was the name of the song? What was that first one?
Which, yes, sir, what was it?
What was the song that you did with Prince, was the first one, the name of it again?
Oh, it was If You See Me. If You See Me, he was, he played guitar on that. Games was another one. Better Than You Think was another one. If We Don't and I Always Love You was a Cookhouse Five. And he later on recorded If You See Me and called it Do Yourself a Favor, but he never released it. But I have the copy of it. You know, it's slamming with him singing on it and everything. But the song that we wrote together was Just Another Sucker. That's when we wrote together.
Wow. Okay, let's
Gus
take
with
a,
me. Gus
let's
worked
take
with
a,
me on Gus, you worked with me on the Navarre release of the Minneapolis Genius.
Yeah, that's when we came to Chicago, and matter of fact, visit Reggie Miles, you remember, at WKKC at that time.
Right, right. Yeah.
Reggie's the one, Pepe, that busted all the records like New Edition with me and all of that. He's the one that was
right.
with me with Navarre. And he was
right.
the program director
yep.
and the first yep. jock at the first person to open up that station when they open up.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. Because, mm-hmm. Gus, we went to.
Yeah, Gus.
Oh, go ahead.
Just up.
Yeah, Gus, he got me at an early time and had me working music, and we met actually at a record store.
Yeah.
I went
yeah.
in to see, and he had New Edition in there.
Oh, okay.
And listen,
yeah.
listen.
And Pepe, they was crying because the big radio stations wouldn't put them on the radio.
Wow.
They turned every station. every
funny.
Number one station, 4 stations I took them to, they wouldn't even let us in the station.
Wow.
So
they was like really
call.
Sad. And they didn't know what to
right.
do, man, because they had just got through performing. With Rick James, see, that's what happened. You got to realize New Edition was the first group ever to come on stage with their tracks.
Right, I see.
You got to realize with Rick James, that big show they had at the Pavilion, here these kids come out there trying to sing, and they got booed off the stage.
Oh, my God.
So they were very down about it, and the stations were down about it, too. They wasn't going to play them because they was calling them, you know, well, that music was bubblegum music, and that's what everybody was saying it was, you know.
Oh, I see.
Reggie said, come on, man, forget about that. Bring them guys over to my station and watch to see what we do for you. And that's what hit me home run. Right out of Chicago, it broke right out of here.
Yeah.
I made a call, and within 15 minutes, it was like 500 people out there to greet them. Those young men, they lit up like Christmas trees when they saw
that's
all those girls
cool,
out there
yeah.
waiting for them.
And
it was a high school
like,
right next
to Yeah, go ahead.
It was a high school right next to the station where I was working at, you know. And I had called the guy, and I said, told him that New Edition is on the way to WKKC. And
wow.
the kids were leaving school to come see those young guys.
And it's
and they were
ironic.
Happy.
It's ironic that you mentioned that, that you had those people out there, because I remember when when Prince's manager got let go, and I had to manage Prince for like 3 months, and we had to go to North Carolina, and it was like over 2,000 kids out there, you know, wanting to see him, and he was just in, I mean, total shock, because we got out of the plane, went to the limo, and we're listening to the radio station in the radio show in the limo, and they were saying, the DJ was going like, yeah, Prince plane just landed, and he's on his way right here, right now. He'll be here. His limo is coming. His plane just landed. And we was on our way to the hotel. We weren't even over going to the event where we had to go. So we went to the hotel, freshened up for like 10, 15 minutes, and then took us over to, I believe it was a school, and there was like 2,000 kids out there, and Prince's main thing, and I want to say this, if you got a lot of talent out there that's listening to the show, his main function was his fans. That was his main priority.
Mm-hmm.
His main priority was his fans. I mean, he did whatever he had to do for his fans. I mean, this guy sat there for hours just signing albums, his For You album, that first album, just signing albums to all of those kids. It was like 2,000 kids out there. And Tommy from Cameo was there too, and he was signing albums, man. But Prince's line was the line. You know, everybody was on that line trying to get hold of his signature on their albums and things, you know. But that was quite an experience for him.
Pepe, let's take a break right here, and just let's listen to If You See.
Oh, great.
Then you can
okay.
tell us more about how that collaboration went. So we're here on Blog Talk Radio. Of course, this is the Real School Remix Radio Show. I'm Reggie Miles, along with Gus Redman, and a host of people that knew the legendary artist called Prince. Stay with us.
Yeah.
If You See Me. Wow, that's great. Hey. Hey Peppy,
that thing still sound good. Still sounding
good.
Oh
yeah,
definitely.
And you can definitely hear Prince playing, and he was he was 17. He was 17 playing there. You know.
Hey Donald, you remember that Donald Burnside? Okay, maybe Donald might have left.
Burnside.
Okay.
Still got a few. We still got a few calls.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Donald. You remember that song, Donald, when we had that out with Navarre?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I sure do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell everybody who you are, Donald, and the things that you do here in Chicago, and your tie-ins with what companies are you working with?
Well, not just to be as short as possible. I like a lot of people, were fortunate enough to have two of the greatest mentors on the planet here in Chicago, from being in high school with Carl Davis, with CBS Brunswick and Chi-Town, and then Granny White with CBS Records, who stayed there for over 40 years. And, being in the studio with Bruce Sweeting and all the Shylights going up to there, being an arranger, playing on sessions, coming up under Tom and, all the people there, and Sonny Sanders, and, branching off doing the stuff with Earth, Wind & Fire with Tom, and, Gene Chandler, the Shylights, Jerry Butler, the Dales, and, all the Chicago groups. And I was a kid when they had me doing that stuff. And so then I went on and, had stuff in the 80s with Captain Sky, who was actually on tour with Prince a couple of times with Cameo and all those big shows, because he was on AVI Records, and we had a really a great run of funk hits with him. The album that stayed on the charts 47
Wonder
weeks. That's right. That's it. That's it. Everybody knows Wonder Woman. Probably maybe one of the second or third most sampled songs in the rap music after James Brown. You know what I mean? seriously. I remember, this is a real quick story, guys. I was in the studio because I work with Entertainment, and we had Keith Sweat when he was the heavyweight champion out there. And so we were in the studio doing some mixes. I was in New York. And so this is when the guys were first, in the 80s, was first starting to put the twist in their hair, and I never saw that. It wasn't popular everywhere. So anyway, I was saying to myself, I got on the suit and the tie, and I was saying to myself, I said, it'd be kind of nice if they could just, put some stuff in your hand, and just like in a few minutes, it just got like that. You wouldn't have to wait so long. And so the guy overheard me saying that, and he went off on me, started saying, see, you guys are trying to commercialize hip-hop. You don't know nothing about hip-hop, blah, 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 blah. So he had a bunch of records. And I said, well, listen, are you keeping anecdotal records, man, and giving people credit for all them samples you're doing? He said, what are you talking about, man? You don't know nothing about hip-hop. I said, man, I co-produced Wonder Worm. The dude got quiet and said, hey, man, can I get a copy of that? I've been looking for a copy. So all of a sudden, man, I had credibility out of the Yeah, because I had something to do with Wonder Worm, man. But then recently, man, Gus and I, I have always had a relationship with Universal. So through the years, I've always been getting distribution deals for various labels. And, last summer, Jessica Love, who happens to be my daughter, came with an inspirational project that we took number 2 on Roots Worldwide and number 13 of Billboard on the Gospel Charts. First record out of the box, boom. It was a smash across the board for Universal. And so, we were very, very fortunate, very, very happy about that. So I've just been lucky to have it was my first entree in the gospel and inspirational, but having been, like I said, with, R&B, soul, and funk, most of my life. And then commercials, too. I did a lot of commercials back in the day, but I never did really get in the commercial thing really heavy. I worked for the number one company in Chicago called Comtrack, did Jolly Green Giant commercials, Ho, 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 and all that stuff, So, but it's been a beautiful run, and I've been fortunate enough to see all the changes that have happened in music and embrace them, as opposed to I was telling a young guy this the other day. I remember in the 80s and the 90s when you would go to a radio station, they would have a sign in the control room, only one rap record an hour. Remember, Gus? Yeah.
They would say one rap record an hour. But people have to understand, as I said, when great people like Quincy Jones, embrace creativity, because that's what it's all about, it's not about the notes, it's about the creativity and the creative art. So once we, recognize that,
it's a beautiful thing. And so I've just been real fortunate, like I said, to be around, you know, Gene Griffin. I work with GR Production, Teddy Riley, and all of them too, you know. So it's just been great because obviously with the Keith Sweat thing, you know, that, you know, the first, you know, album was done by Teddy Riley and Gene Griffin. So then we did Johnny, you know, Johnny Kemp, and we did, you know, Rex and Effects and, you know, Basic Black and all that stuff like that. And God rest his soul.
That's a great history. That's a great history, Don. And let me remind you.
I wanted to.
Let me remind
for him,
you.
All the people that we picked tonight, Reggie, have been working with myself, Pepe. Pepe, you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
I mean, me and Pepe took me out to see Princeton was at a club, and I got a chance to see all of that before. And, Reggie, you remember KMOJ was the sister station that had always played the same records you all did, played because Pepe gave me a chance by working in Navarra, and I was representing about 40-some groups at the same time, Pepe, New Edition, Run DMC, Boogie Down Production. I had everything. So we were the hottest distribution company Minneapolis ever seen. And Minneapolis was actually programming the music for the whole country, right, Pepe?
That's right.
All the major chain stores was out of Minneapolis. Yeah. You know, that used to go in these malls and stuff all over the country back in the day. So Minneapolis was where it came from. So that's why Navarra was such a big company, and I had a chance to work with that company with Pepe and all of these groups that I just mentioned, you know. I think we got some more people on the phone. Mac, are you on the phone?
Well, I'm going to jet out, man. Yeah. I got to go, but it was a pleasure, you know. Keep it going.
Thank you, Pat.
Keep Prince music alive, and, you know, because he's a talent, and he's part of the black history and music and everything, and he set a lot of goals, man, you know. So we just want to keep him going, and God bless him and his family, baby.
All and right. God bless all of you all that's going to continue that with the knowledge that you all have. I know we're going to keep it going anyway.
Absolutely.
Hey, Gus.
Yes, sir.
Thanks a lot,
hey,
guys. Thank
yes.
You.
Thanks, Pepe. Okay, let's do a roll call. Who do we have on the air right now? Just say your name, where you're from. I'm Reggie Miles, and I'm in Chicago.
Paris, McNabb's in Minneapolis.
Paris in London.
Don Burnside, Chicago.
All right.
Stephen Wren in New York.
You at?
Hello?
That was Reggie. Who did you just say, Reggie?
Godfather. I mean, Gus.
Oh, where am I at? Oh, you said the Godfather. I didn't know who you was talking about.
Hey, Gus.
What? See, you know,
hey,
Reggie always, you all, he always been saying that since we going to, we began did so much of this music. Steve from New York is on. Steve is from Atlanta, you all, originally from New Jersey, and he was well associated with me, and he was the one breaking my records before Prince. But he was the first one to be able to bring Prince out as a record pool. He had the first black record pool we had in the South. And, Steve, can you tell us your part about your days with Prince?
Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was saying my name, and I didn't know if anybody heard me. No, basically, you know, how y'all doing this evening?
Everybody's good, Steve.
Okay, good. No, basically, when I was, you know, I was the first DJ in Atlanta with the two turntables and the mixing technique. You know, and basically I had to introduce that, you know, to people that wasn't used to it, you know. And, you know, they would always yell at the DJ booth, let the record in, you know, because they didn't want the nonstop, man. So they were just yelling. They was used to dead air, you know. And, you know, so Jocko Carter, you know, these guys came by and they had this gentleman, you know, that they was bringing around. And, you know, the skinny guy and come up in my DJ booth and, you know, talk about they got a new record and they wanted to try the record. And I listened to the record and I was like, you know, this is different than everything we were playing. And, you know, being a DJ and trying to mix and nonstop, you know, you don't want nothing to interrupt that flow. you know. So yeah. I basically had to find a creative way, being that Warner Brothers was in the house, you know. But in the meantime, I had to let the brother know, thank you for the record, but you got to get out my DJ booth, you know. And, you know, and he said, okay. I said, thank you, man. I was like, man, step back, dude. So we take it and we took it and we had to program it from the middle, you know, more or less from the breakdown, and then go back to the top, you know, once we were able to mix it in with something else. And, you know, it was just a very interesting time in trying to introduce the mixing technique at the same time, trying to program records that needed to get airplay, but they needed their street exposure before they got the airplay. And, you know, it still wasn't in play because that was the first club with two turntables. We only had two clubs in Atlanta at that time. You know, all the other clubs were live bands and one turntable, you know. But, you know, and at the end of the day, y'all know the rest is history. But it was – and I worked with Navari and Gus on that on the other record that Pepe did. I worked that record with Tony Sylvester. And that record, you know, I was talking to Tony, I was talking to Gus. And that was interesting, the whole concept behind it, because I had worked with Colonel Abrams. I had worked with Mars Day. And, you know, here it is. You know, I come back, and all of a sudden, everybody's involved in one project. You know, so I'm like, when did this happen? You know, so, you know, it's just very interesting, our history, where a lot of our artists come from, and, you know, and where they've gone. You know, my thing is I really – it, one thing that stirs me is when a lot of these guys, they started out together and, you know, they got so separated that, you know, they can never come back together, man, to do things, you know, and a lot of egos just get in, a lot of egos just get in the way, man. And, you know, we could have had more, and, we could have had some things that were different, you know. We got a lot, but we could have had more, you know. And even today, you know, watching it, we got three different Blue Magics. We got three different Temptations. We got the, you know, all these different things, man. And it bothers me that our brothers can't come together and our sisters can't come together. Female groups, forget it. And, you know, just come together, man, and ride it on out the way they wrote it in. Ride it out.
Well, you know what? You know what, Steve? I can say something to back you up on that, and I'm glad to hear you say that because that's really true. And just like me and Steve's relationship, man, it go back so far. You all with Peebo Bryson, with I had called Ripple. I don't know what it is, but it sure is funky. Another group I had called Brick, Disco Dazz. I mean, this is the guy right here, you all, who broke every record I had in Atlanta. Anywhere I would go from Atlanta back to Florida, Steve had it all. He had a DJ pool. And they were pretty nice. And then we had another friend of ours that came out of Chicago named Dino, and he came down and started the Million Dollar Dance Crew. Well, back with Jack the Rapper, when we had the real conventions going and when artists threw us gathering and coming together to have meetings and share our respects to each other and also our artistry. You remember that, Steve? You remember when we had all of the things with Jack the Rapper all them years?
Man, you know, Jack the Rapper basically was the adhesive that basically has, you know, that actually brought the black side of the music industry together. Because, you know, most of these guys, before they came to Jack the Rapper, they were just talking to each other over the phone and not meeting each other in person. You know what I mean? And Jack the Rapper and then all the other conferences allow program directors and promoters and national and vice president and all of these people to come together and meet in person. And radio people that talk to other radio people, you know, that was on the same line, you know, and, you know, from the same organization, same franchise that never met each other, you know. So it really brought us in to really create a family. That's why it was named right, the Family Affair, you know, and it allowed us to do a lot of parlaying, you know, and we were able to really make the black side of the music industry much stronger than what it was because we had a cohesiveness that we didn't have, you know, and they had us separated. But, you know, once we came together, you know, we started really making some noise and making a difference.
Yeah. So, and we need more of that. I know you were just trying to set the Young Black Program Director to kind of bring them back together. Didn't you just attempt to do that?
Yeah. Yep.
Are you still planning on doing that, Steve?
You know what, Gus? That's something that that I would come back to at another time when you know, when the atmosphere is right. You know what I mean? And you know, and the justification is just there, without, you know, without hesitation. Because one thing that we ran into was a lot of these program directors that were working under the corporate companies. Some of them started going under these rules that they were not allowed to join any organizations.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Reggie ran through that himself. Reggie was back in Chicago, and he was running a big gospel organization, and it became political and people jealous. I mean, you know, people like yourself and Reggie, who I've been dealing with for 40-plus years, I mean 40-plus, it's been historical for us because you all always have been the pioneers to bring the forth anyway. Like I told you two in the course of a week, they are the people who make decision makers. Reggie still runs a college. He's a professor and runs a radio station and still part of the gospel, you know, association that's out there, vice president of that. So it's still a lot that we all do. Donald Burns, are you still on too, right, Paris?
Yes, I'm still here.
You know, Paris, you know, everybody used to say all the time with me when I first had your record, I choose you. And, of course, everybody thought it had the Def and the Prince flavor. And like you were telling the story, but the real story was that Prince did get his brand from the motorcycle from Paris, because people that me and Paris was with sold the plot to Prince's family for them to have that, because Paris never wanted to go there at the first place. You know, saying he was always going to be what we call him now, the composer. And he's over in London and got over 50, 60 movies that he's doing music for over there and bringing a lot of the business back for us to be able to do with Pepe and Mac. You on the phone?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, because Mac is getting ready to come up to talk to him about it. Mac is the last of the girls and Donald that we're bringing up, and Mac is doing some work for all of us that's on the phone right now, Paris as well as Donald Burnside. And Mac came out of Prince's camp. That's going to be a heck of a story for you all here. Can we play another one of Prince's records, maybe about now, and then we can come back in and...
That's what I was going to ask, Steve. But what was the song that you broke from Prince back in the day that you had to play in that?
That was Soft and Wet.
Good. That's what I thought it was. And we'll be right back. Stay right here with us. We are celebrating the life of the legendary artist Prince. Of course, myself and Gus Redman. We're on the line with a host of other great people that knew of and related to Prince during his lifetime. So we'll be right back. Keep it right here. We're going to listen to the song that Brother Steve had to break when they were playing what? When he was the first to play with two turntables back in Atlanta. I think this came out in the 70s. I know it was the late 70s. I remember that. I remember that when we got that with the Dogs of War here in Chicago when that came through the pool, when I was in a record pool back in the day. Wow. Soft and Wet Prince. Brother Steve, how did that work when you mixed it? I heard that bread.
Man, that was, like I said, you know, it had such a diversified beat, man. I had to, like, you know, just bring it in from that drive part. When he went into that drive, and I went in because, you know, what I was playing, the beats per minute, and it fit right in. And then when they went into the drive, and then they came back out in the Soft and Wet into, you know, breaking it, you know, went into the regular beat, I was able to go back to the top.
Wow. I kind of heard that. I said, yeah, this is where he grabbed it. And I never thought of that. You know, that was pretty cool. That was a great story. I was back in the day disc jockey like you that had the two turntables, but I did play them one at a time. We talked between the stuff. All right. That was really good to hear that story of how you used Prince's music to start the DJ revolution, the two turntable revolution back down in the great city of Atlanta. Gus, where are we going from here?
Well, I think right now we want to go to Mac Nasty. Mac, you on the phone?
Yeah, I got Art on here too.
Oh, great. So these are, this is the new team of geniuses that. And they're not new. Matter of fact, when they tell their story, these are some guys that I've been working with the last 5 years, Reggie, with Mac Nasty, who is from Chicago. And I just got that personal thing about somebody if you're from Chicago. And he always showed me that he was one of the best of. But when he left Chicago, he went to work with Dr. Dre, and then he left Dr. Dre and went to Oklahoma and then over to Prince. And that's where him and Art are now. And they're known as the MUG is the name of our publishing company, and then the name of the production house is Smash Sound Syndicate. And these two guys is like Jimmy Jam, man. I'm gonna let them tell the story. I'm gonna shut up and let them tell the story. Matt, go ahead and take the flow.
Hey, how y'all doing, man? It's a pleasure to be amongst everybody on this call here, man. Me and Art Haynes, Art has more history here in Minneapolis than I do. I came here in February 93. Art basically, you know, can you tell me your involvement with Prince and whatnot?
Yeah, I've been in the Twin Cities since about 1978, and I came through a lot of the same situations, the same clubs, the same musicians. I mean, you name it. We all kind of grew up together in Minneapolis. The Minneapolis music scene has probably been one of the richest and most fertile grounds for, I guess you could say, not only the sound that we're popularized for having, but just having great musicians. And we're talking ever since, you know, the jazz age in the 30s and 40s, all the way up to, you know, the golden years of the Minneapolis Sound with Prince. And the bottom line is we've all been able to have kind of like a family, but a friendly rivalry through the years. And we all grew up playing together in different bands. And the different bands had, you know, competitions with each other, but they were more like healthy competitions. You know, instead of being hateful and having haters, we were like, hey, man, you know, we're going to go out there and we're going to smoke and on this talent show, and we're going to take the first prize and we're going to take all the labels. You know, and that was just a comfortable place for us to be, because if one band rehearsed a little bit more, it showed that week. So the next week or the next month when there was another talent show, we would be challenged to become better. So we all kind of grew up with that camaraderie, but it was also a healthy competition. As far as working for and around Prince, it's always been a get a phone call out of the clear blue and find yourself needing to be out at Paisley and do some pre-production or some production work. It's always been, well, you know, there's an artist that a group's being put together for. We want you to come out and check it out. You know, that type of thing. So it's always been something or another. Once you associate it, you're always in it, you know. And it's kind of like a big family. That's exactly what it is, a big family.
See, when I came here in 93, this is Mac. When I came here in 93, I was working at, me and my cousin, my little buddy, we were working at Singer. And a lady who babysit Andre Simone and Prince when they were younger overheard us practicing for a demo. And she was like, hey, one of my sons is probably like, y'all sound pretty good. You know, I can understand what y'all are saying. So like a week later, she had us go downstairs. She said, my son about to pull up and whatnot. So we went downstairs and a yellow BMW pulls up. And it's Prince. And he's with some girl and whatnot. And he said rap. You know, so we rapped on the spot. And then he wound up giving us his phone number to Tony Mosley, who was his rapper at the time, who wrote Diamonds and Pearls with him and also Get Off. So we wound up, that's how we started getting to go to Paisley Park, just because we had to rap on the spot. And then when I got time to doing production and stuff, when I got into that whole scene was basically by mistake, because I was messing with the record, and Prince began into a discussion about how hip-hop, he would say that hip-hop is really music. You know, so we took a big piece of everybody himself, James Brown and everybody. And so it was like a discussion of, like, you know, if you can create original hip-hop, then I would consider it really neat. Or whatever, because y'all chasing everybody, you know, that's the whole thing. So he said, it's $550 an hour in Studio A. He said, I'm going to invest $550 into you if you can create an original hip-hop record without no record. So, and I was a sampler. I had an MPC 2000, you know, a sampler type person. So, but he said, as an engineer, you got your drum machine and the keyboard. Come up with something. If I don't like it, you owe me $550. So I'm in there sweating bullets. So I go over to the right. I ain't got no way to pay this man no $550. So I had to teach myself some chords on the spot and everything like that. So that's how I got to the point of, you know, one chord I can remember was the ones I heard in my head from the Jazz Crusaders with Joe Sample and them. And Weather Report, you know, I was like a punk jazz person, you know what I'm saying? Herbert Laws and everything. So I was trying to find the chords just by hearing some records I used to sample. And I pieced something together. And then Prince did over the intercom, so I liked that. And that's how I got into production. I actually taught myself how to play by ear, because Prince is going to charge me $550. That's that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's just, so these are the new members of the company we have called MUG.
Okay.
And like I said, all the way from the beginning with Pepe and being part of helping put the Minneapolis, you know, not the music, but the know-how, we were going to break the records in Minneapolis and the record stores we had and the record pools that was even over in Minneapolis, the same thing what Steve and did down in Atlanta and what Steve did. You heard Steve say he's from New York. So when he went to Atlanta, he knew what New York was doing down to Atlanta. Am I right, Steve? Is Steve still on?
Yeah, I'm still on. I had it on mute. I didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, Steve was the one who brought New York to Atlanta. That's because Atlanta was getting to be jet set, and it was going, you know, it was during the early time. We were down in Atlanta before everything was going. Steve was with the first black club that we all went to in Atlanta. That's the club he spent at. And that's the club that Prince came in to for his first promotion, too. So these are back, I guess that was in the 70s, right, Steve? I'm quite sure.
Yeah, that was. Tell you the truth, that was about 76.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that was about 76, I believe, because, you know, that was my second time at JG Reflections. And, you know, that was, again, the first club that did that. And in all due respect, Gus, I was the first black record pool in the country, because I had to fight those dance music departments. The irony with the industry back then is the dance music departments were run by pop people that were in the pop field. You know, and mostly gays that ran the dance music departments because of the clubs, you know, the gay clubs and the straight clubs. But they had our records on 12 inches. They had Funkadelics on 12 inches, Bar Kays on 12 inches. But the black music department didn't even know that those records existed on 12 inches. You know, I basically had to be a whistleblower. I had to go to Warner Brothers and show them, did you see this? They're like, where'd you get that from? Funkadelics on a 12-inch. I got it from New York. They're like, what? Went to Columbia, showed them his records on 12-inch. Again, the black music department had no access to the 12-inches, you know? But still, their singles were on 12-inches that they were trying to get played on the radio, but then the 12-inches, and they were sending them, what happened was they were sending them to the white record pools, and the white record pools was throwing in the garbage Mash Productions, Anglo-Saxon Brown, Jimmy Castebush. They threw those records in the garbage. You know, I took the records out of the garbage. I said, do y'all mind if I take these records? They said, no. I took them out of the garbage and went and gave them to black DJs. And that inspired me to go in and start the record pool because, you know, they was taking the Al product and throwing them in the garbage, okay? You know, because they knew that the gay clubs and the white and the straight clubs were not going to play them, you know? So, you know, basically I had to whistle blow on that. And then we have Brick House, right? Brick House, y'all know how big that record was, but in the disco dance chart, it wasn't nowhere on there, mainly because they didn't have no black DJs reported to the Billboard disco chart. You know, so
I had none at that time.
Steve.
Yeah.
Wow. Steve, yeah. I mean, it's like, I'm like going through my mind and I'm seeing certain things because I'm remembering when Space Age came out. From when you said Jim Caster. You mean to tell me they put that in the garbage?
Yeah, man. Hey, they didn't need it, and they had a lot of records.
Space Age was the basis of a new dance, man. They did what they call that Earl Flint Finn off of that, man.
Yeah, man. If it wasn't something that they were going to play, if it wasn't something they were going to play, man, I mean, you know, they threw Bertha Butt in the garbage, man.
Wow.
You know, Anglo-Saxon Brown, Mass Production, man. I mean, this was prime stuff, you know, but they had no black DJs that were part of the record pools, you know. And then the Billboard, the dance music charts didn't reflect our music neither. So I basically had the first black DJs that reported to the Billboard charts. I had to fight for that too, you know, because I'm like, wait a minute, how y'all trying to keep us out? How y'all trying to keep black music out of this scene? You know, I went to the Billboard Disco Forum, and you know, I'm talking to the guy that distributes the Motown product. Same thing. This guy, I'm like, look, I'm in Atlanta. I need the Motown product. He's already servicing the white record pool, so because he's servicing him, he's not going to service me, you know? And I'm sitting up here, you know, they were, like, treating our black music like disco was it now and black music was. And I'm like, are y'all crazy? Black music won't last forever. What are y'all talking about, you know? I mean, it was deep, man. It was really deep how they was trying to push us to the back of the, back of the line with our music.
That is incredible. Well, thank you for your perseverance and pushing through, you know, get our music back to the forefront, especially with the record pools and the DJs. You went on the air tonight, Gumbo for the Soul, and we're celebrating the life of Prince, and we're talking about music in general. And this is something that we normally do all the time with Gus Redmond and many of the people that he knows that have been, you know, prominent in this music industry. I think one day we just need to have a story of how a record goes from creativity to the public, so people can understand, and some of the new people that are trying to get into this business can understand what that process is, how record promotions and all that thing, all those things work together today. Let's get a roll call. Who's on the air right now? Who's online with us? Would you say your name? This is Reggie Miles, and I'm in Chicago. Professor Miles, I'm in Chicago. Who else is on the line?
This is Gus Redman, and I'm from Chicago.
Paris, John Burnside, I'm from Chicago. Say it again, Paris.
Paris, London.
Don Burnside, Chicago.
So, Steve, go.
Stephen Rim, I'm in New York.
All right, great, DJ.
Mac, y'all still on? Minneapolis.
Mac Nass, I'm in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
All right.
Mac, let me. Reggie, you want to play another song first, and then we go back to Mac?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's go into another piece of Prince. Let me pick something that I like. Okay.
All right.
Let me. Oh my God, it can't be messing up on me right now. All right, good. I'm having a little technical difficulty now, right here. So okay, let's see where we are. And in the meantime, Gus, give us some remarks on where we're going while I'm trying to fix this up for us.
Well, after we agreed with the song, we were gonna go to Mac and Art, and I wanted to tell them to tell some of the things what's going on with us today, from all of the big things that came out of the Prince camp. They were able to learn a lot, and now they out in front now, you know, because back in the day, most of the guys like themselves were behind the scene, and they played on a lot of the hit records and helped write a lot of the records. But you got to realize that machines like Prince, people like R. Kelly, the people work up under them have just become the writers, but they become the writers that's unknown. So in the case of Art and Paris, what we're doing, Paris knows this for sure. He's from London, and like I said, he's been in this a long time with, you know, myself and Otis LaVelle and a lot of the historians, artists that we deal with every day. Yeah, me and Donald Burnside just got lowered twice a deal with Universal just the last month, and he's 84 years old, right, Don?
Wow.
And, man, when y'all hear the record we got coming on, you ain't going to believe it. Because, you remember, he started the music back with Mr. Personality and songs that did really, you know, he started with Little Richard and James Brown and all them guys there, but they call that, though, that music wasn't called R&B music back in the day. It was called rock and roll, you know? So as we continue.
This is the engineering booth. If Reggie is still having any problems, I'm ready to take over.
I
drop that music
it,
for you. All right. Enjoy.
All right, guys. Here we go. Let's go with it. This is one of those dramatic songs that I like from Prince. I love to see him play this when he did this live.
I keep a picture beside my bed. I still remember every little thing you said. I always thought our love so right, and I guess I was wrong. I always thought you'd be by my side. Baby, now you're gone, you're gone, now you're gone. Listen, oh no, baby, the love we had was good.
Sing it.
I want you to know, know me. Anymore.
listen. Feel like a fire on a rainy night, yeah. Everybody says that you and me should never part.
Maybe they thought we look kind of cute together, I don't know.
Tell me, babe, why
you wanna go break your little princess heart?
Doing Bottoms Up was the first record we really touched with the Minneapolis sound.
from that time period, because art comes from that time frame, and time period. So it's all authentic. Yep.
Did I play a lot of the guitar parts that we added on that?
Art did.
All the guitar and the bass and anything that sounds like a Minneapolis sound whatsoever was done from scratch by hand by us. That's how we do it. We like a really organic sound. We can play things out of the box like a lot of producers do, like using electronic devices and using samples and things like that. We're really good at programming and doing that type of thing, but we're also really, there's a purist side to us too, where we like to go in and actually use the real instruments and actually play them. And so with doing the Minneapolis sound, it actually came like second nature coming up in that time and coming up with people who literally Prince listened to the same people I listened to locally here. We would go and see each other's bands. He would even come down and see the bands that I played in back in the late 70s, early 80s. And they would incorporate some of the sounds that we did and things that we did. We even got to the point where we stopped doing original material when he would walk in, because he was such a brilliant musician and such a genius. He could walk in, listen to what you were playing if it was an original composition on stage. He'd sit there, no pencil, no paper, nothing, and just listen. And he could go back to the studio and recreate the entire thing. I mean, literally.
So is that the magic of what I know what's going on with us with the Shawlite songs? We're doing that particular one, and then we got two others, and we got the TL song we're doing. We're doing the Lost Generation song. We're doing a Prince song. So what you're saying is that you and Mac, y'all know you all are the top company makes. Is that true? Can I put y'all on a spot like that?
There isn't anything that we're not willing to put our hands on, because we want to do it with reverence to the music and the way it was written, and also modernize it and keep it current enough to relaunch or to even launch something new.
So Mac, can you all tell me some of the people you all are working with other than what we talked about? Aren't you working with a CeCe Peniston remix as well and some other things? Also the Paris record, I Choose You, Reggie, we doing it. It's called I Dig You Now. And wait till you see what they did with that, Reggie.
Wow.
Yeah, so Uptight did a version called I Dig You, the artist that we have and also a partner of ours. CeCe Peniston heard of the house remake we did on my first mistake for the satellite system, taking off Chicago like wildfire. And she called me and said, "Hey, I heard that y'all did with that. But the satellite, I need a 25-year anniversary remake of Finally." So we started that from scratch. It's a new sound that we're cultivating called Nouveau House. Nouveau House is something the Rain Cell has been having for 4 years. And basically it finally came to a head with the Soul Satellites record. And now CeCe Peniston is going to be the first female voice we're going to have for the Nouveau House launch. So Nouveau House is basically Nouveau Soul, house music, and jazz. That's what Nouveau House is. And so it's going to be mature, sexy, melodic, soulful house music. So it's like a deep state house that we're cultivating and whatnot. And that's Smackdown Tennis is approved. That's what we do. So, but it's going to have a little bit of the average now, of course. But that's what we do.
And what's the main, and what's the other project with the jazz player, Miles Davis?
I was approached about doing getting the opportunity to do a Miles Davis remake. And so I'm on the phone. So basically, we wound up getting the stem. We had to get the stem for a Miles Davis song called Rubber Band from like 30 years ago. And
wow.
Basically, Because I asked a friend of mine, Randy Hall, you know, Randy Hall from the 80s, you know.
And he's from Chicago, another Chicago,
right? Yeah, in Chicago, you know, studied at Berklee University of Music. And, you know, he had some nice hits in the 80s and whatnot. That's like my big brother out in Vegas. And him and Zane Giles was, you know, he produced Luther and stuff, and also the director of music for the show A Different World. And so they the ones who produced Miles in the 80s. And so they said, look, this is your opportunity that you asked for. And when I saw it, look, thank you very much. And when that's what they said, you're going to be, it's going to be competition. So me and Art was like, kick it off, you know. And so we have our way of working with each other and whatnot. We can sound like me and Art could be across the country in different parts of the country and sound like we're in the same room when we get done with our music. And so that's the blessing we have. And so when we got done with it and stuff, we found out who our competition was.
Yeah.
And our competition were other producers. It was Raphael Sadiq. It was Easy Mo B. It was
okay.
DJ Premier.
Rock. How do we do? She got a part.
That's of the competition for this particular record. So Nas is the person who actually picked the track that we made for the project, for the Rubber Band project.
Right,
So that's what happened. So now we're actually picked up and we're hoping by night. So the Miles Davis record is going to be coming out this summer.
No, not Andy.
Yeah, I'm here, guys.
Okay, somebody's talking. I hear somebody's talking.
Somebody's talking in the background.
Okay.
I can't see which line that is. Mute.
Where are we time-wise? Are we almost finished with the show?
We want to
go from here.
Got 6 minutes.
Did anybody else want to say anything toward... toward the Prince celebration of life, what we did. This is what happened, you all. We had this show scheduled for the birthday, but we had some problems with the technology, and that's why we just postponed it and did it today.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to still honor our friend and associate and his music, you know, for today.
But I have no problem as long as it's going to be, you know, just...
Who is that talking?
No, I work right now.
Who is that?
Working. They got off work.
Oh, that's Steve talking. Steve.
What's his area code? Let me see. What's his New York?
Yeah, it is.
He's not on mute.
Hey, Gus.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, we heard you talk. You were talking in the background. We could hear you talking in the background.
Man, see, that's why I was having it on mute before. And then this
right.
time it did on me,
yeah.
See?
Yeah.
I'm
we get ready to end it. Anything. Did you have anything else you wanted to say, Steve, before we kind of, you know, bring it to end?
No, other than the fact that, you know, these, you know, for yourself that I had a, you know, I was involved with several internet radio stations, man, and, you know, and that's the one frontier that we have in the industry. That, you know, we could really be honest and really share the history, because I'm telling you, there's no other places, man. It's allowing us to really get this information out, you know, to really let everybody know how it was, you know, and basically, you know, how we got here in order to know how to move forward.
Yeah. And I thank you, too. I think it was great to be part of this show, because you're part of it. It was very interesting. And I forgot about you was the first record pool that was back there before we had even the Dogs of War. Matter of fact, that's where Eddie got the idea from him, Reggie.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah, he knew Eddie Thomas, too, because Eddie Thomas used to send the product to him as well, you know.
I definitely make sure you know, and Steve, I hope you don't mind. Well, Gus, I want to definitely get that, get his contact information, because I would definitely love to talk to him about that, because I will certainly be more than happy to put together a podcast with you where you can talk about that history, because I love sharing that type of information. I'm a teacher, so that's my thing.
No. You know, he just left from up. He just left Steve from up in your area. Steve, he was in Washington at WHUR at Howard. He's teaching over there, Steve.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Over there with my brother.
Yeah.
That and HUR.
So Donald Burnside, you want to say anything before we come to the end? Are you still there? Okay, Paris.
Yeah. I wanted to get a chance to talk to Pepsi.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paris.
I wanted to get a chance to talk to Pepsi, and I didn't, about the face-to-face meeting with Prince and Mark Anthony and what his reaction was. Are you familiar with who Mark Anthony is?
No, Prince. I think Donald knew him.
And I just wanted to know what Prince's reaction was to seeing his double.
Oh, right. You know what? I can hook you back up with Pepe. I'll hook up a conversation with you, Paris, with Pepe.
Okay.
Because he's off the phone. He had already hung up already.
Oh.
So did you want to say anything else, or did we, you know, Donald Burnside?
Well, like I said, it's been great. Really honored to have been a part of it. I was actually trying to get Gus knows when I'm talking about Ray Daniels, who worked with us at Brunswick as well, you know, from back in the day as well with the resurgence of Brunswick in the 80s when the, you know, the Young and Company and Bob Mason and crew and all that was hits over there. And I brought a group called First Love and what have you. But his son has been in Minneapolis for years and recently spent a lot of time with Prince. I mean, over the last 5 or 6 years or so, was very, very instrumental. I was trying to get him on the phone, but I wasn't able to get him there, but maybe at another time. His name is Steve Riddick, and he spent an awful lot of time out there at Paisley with Prince, you know, during these last 2 years, and, you know, he knew about his death before it even hit the news, and it called me, and I was like, what are you talking about, you know? So I was really trying to get him on to, you know, share some things very, very recent about Prince, but, you know, that's another time, and we'll get to it, so. Okay, well, that's it for me, and thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for being a guest with us tonight. And, Steve, I guess we good. And then, Paris, anything else from you?
Yeah, everything's all right.
Good. So what we're going to do, you all just keep on making these. Here's the one thing, all of us are still into music today, all doing music more than dealing with the samples and everything that, like Art said, from what we're doing, we playing the real instruments and taking songs and as we chopping them up. And we also had a chance to take one of Don Burnside's songs too that he had on a group that was a hot record, and we chopped that up, and that's another hot song too. So that's what we're doing, and you'll be hearing a lot of music from the MUG family. Beverly, can I have you come and sign off for us?
It's an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure. Gentlemen, thank you so, so very much for allowing Tribe Family Channel and Genius is Common to host the Real School Music Remix Radio Show. Reggie Miles, Gus Redman, Pepe, Magnasty, Mr. I forget the other gentleman that's on here, but this is just a historical show, and it's always an honor and a privilege to, you know, spend our time with you all. You drop gems, and it is just essential that we continue to keep doing what we're doing. My hats are off to you, and I salute you. And so happy belated birthday to Mr. Prince, the artist, Rogers Nelson, and God bless and keep you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to go out with some music, right, Reggie?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, so let's do it. Hey.
Big disease with a little name. By chance, his girlfriend came across a needle, and soon she did the
days. At home, there are 17-year-old boys, and their idea of fun is being in a gang called the Disciples, high on crack, toting a machine gun. Church and kill everyone inside. You turn on the telly and every other story is telling you somebody died. My sister killed a baby cause she couldn't afford to feed it, and it was sending people to the moon. In September my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing hard. It's June. Neighbors should shine at home. But if a night falls and a bomb falls, will anybody see the dawn? Time.
Hey, baby.